up, everyone? Welcome in to another edition of Ball Don't Lie. I am your host, Cole Polly, and I'm thrilled to be here. This is such an exciting time of the year to come in and talk hoops. It is always a joy to do this podcast, but man, this time of the year when basketball is really clicking, total joy to come in here and do the podcast. I'm so excited. We're going to run the gauntlet. We're going to talk every section of hoops. We're going to talk about the NBA. We're going to talk about March Madness. We're all the way down to the Final Four. A lot to talk about there. And we're even going to go all the way down to the NIT. I didn't assume that we'd be talking a lot of NIT here on Ball Don't Lie. But with the fact that this is a TCU podcast and TCU is all the way down to the Final Four of the NIT, they're in New York. That makes it worthy enough to give it a little discussion for sure. Second time in the last three seasons that they've made it down to the Final Four in the NIT over in the Big Apple. So shout out to those guys. So yeah, like I said, we're gonna hit every section. We're clicking on all cylinders today. We're running the gauntlet. We're gonna start out with a little NBA before we get to the madness. So last week, I was fortunate enough to, and you know, those that know me, of course, know I'm a big Spurs fan. That's been talked about for sure on this podcast. And last week, I was fortunate enough to go down to San Antonio and be there for the jersey retirement of Manu Ginobili. There were a couple of big jersey retirements in the NBA last week with Chris Bosh down in Miami, and of course Manu in San Antonio. Both great. I saw the clips of Bosh, and it looked like a good time down there in Miami. Ginobili in San Antonio was unbelievable. I had to take a few minutes out here to talk about that a little bit. Seeing all the guys back together. I mean, I think for any NBA fan that was exciting, seeing Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Greg Popovich all together again. I mean, incredible trio. They're being coached by Popovich, and four championships between them, and seeing number 20 go to the rafters. I mean, that's my favorite player. So, and like, I'm talking favorite player, like ever. Really, it's a tie between he and Duncan. But, I mean, if I had to choose just one, it would be Manu Ginobili. So it was incredible getting a chance to actually be down there and be in the building, see his number go to the rafters. Can't even describe it. It was an incredible experience. And for any NBA fan or for a fan of sports, period, that's something I would recommend. That's something I would recommend you pull out all the stops. If you get the opportunity to be there and have that chance and see one of your favorite players have their number retired and be honored by your favorite team, man, that's something you shouldn't miss. Because I've had a lot of special nights in the AT&T Center over the year. I've been incredibly fortunate. I've been to the NBA Finals. I've been to several playoff games that were big for the Spurs. Seen a lot of big performances, and so I've seen a lot in there. I've seen a lot of special nights, and that's right up there at the top of the list now for me. Seeing Manu Ginobili get his number retired. So, congrats to Manu. Congrats to Chris Bosh down in Miami. Also totally deserving for Bosh. Couple of championships with the Heat, and somebody who was so ingrained in that community. Chris Bosh totally deserved it as well, and I was happy to see his number get retired down there in Miami. But I wanted to talk for a few minutes here about what it means for a franchise when they retire the number of a player. Like, what is it exactly that makes a player deserving of having their number in the rafters forever? Because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and kind of talking about this, and I think it's super relevant in today's NBA. As we know, it's the player's culture right now more so than ever. There are a lot of teams flipping. There are a lot of stars kind of flipping teams. We've seen a lot of guys force trades here over the last few years. We've seen a lot of guys walk away from the team that drafted them in free agency. You know the list. I don't even need to name off guys, but that's the trend in the NBA right now. So That's what makes it so interesting for me, thinking about which guys it is that deserve to have their number in the rafters for a certain franchise. Because you see these guys that they pile up accomplishments, they'll pile up all-stars, all-NBA, playoff accomplishments, what have you, and then leave the team they're originally on. And of course, things will develop over the years, and some of that hurt, of course, goes away over the years from being spurned by a certain player. But it's just interesting to think about if they still deserve to have that honor if things ended badly between them and the team. So just thinking about that, my take on the whole thing is that it's, of course, having your number retired is about accomplishments. I mean, there are no players that that are able to get their number retired without having accomplished great things. It only makes sense. It goes hand in hand. You want championships. You want the accolades, and of course, you want a good length of career on the team from the player. It's rare to see a player who didn't have as long of a tenure with the team have their number retired. Really, that Miami Heat trio, like that was, I think, the shortest run. Of course, you know, Dwayne Wade, you know, lifelong Heat, you know, the greatest player in Miami Heat history, of course. But you're certainly going to see LeBron James get his number retired after only having 4 years on the team. But that was kind of a next level of greatness. 4 years in a row of going to the finals, 2 championships. That's kind of like, for a situation to be like that, I think you have to kind of go to the next level of greatness. And Bosch did spend a couple more years on the Heat than LeBron did, but a pretty short tenure and a lot accomplished for Bosch. And also just the way he was loyal to the team, re-signed with the team, ingrained himself with the team. I think those are the things that kind of made him worthy. And that's, I feel like that's kind of where I'm going with this, because of course you want the accolades, but to me, it's more about the relationship between the player and the team than it is anything else. If you think of that team and that player pops to your mind and that player is synonymous with that team, they've represented what that team is all about. They've brought that team to new heights. They've been loyal to that team, even though I know it's a question of loyalty. It's a double standard for players versus teams. You know, teams ship a guy off. You know, after the player having remained loyal, a lot like the Toronto Raptors did with DeMar DeRozan. You see it all the time. It's a business, and make no mistake about that. But in terms of having your number retired, I think as a player, it's not too much to ask for you to have shown that loyalty. And I think that's the crux of the whole thing here. When I look at the Spurs, who are my favorite team, and really, that's kind of what I have to go off, since the Spurs are my team. I care about who's in the rafters for the Spurs. I'm emotionally invested in the team. I think it's the easiest for me to judge there. And think about a player like Kawhi Leonard. There's a lot of sentiment out there. I think there are a lot of people who would say that Kawhi Leonard deserves to have his number retired with the Spurs, and I can see why they would say that. One of my good buddies, Casey, who's a big Spurs fan, who lives south down there, saw Manu get his number retired with me. He's definitely of that opinion that Kawhi should have his number retired after his career's over. He should have the number 2 in the rafters for San Antonio. And he certainly had, it was a climb up for Kawhi. He was drafted by the Spurs, and we all know the story of his improvement, of getting the Finals MVP in 2014, which was a big deal, a major accomplishment, of course. But to me, that doesn't absolve. I think it still matters what you do after that. The moment you win the finals or you win the finals MVP, I don't think that's the moment your number goes to the rafters. And some people would certainly disagree with me. But the accolade isn't what gets you that honor, in my opinion. It's a career. It's a whole thing. And just because you get a certain accolade, just because you win the finals, just because you got the finals MVP, that's great, and that's a major stepping stone, but that doesn't mean you just get to do whatever you want after that and the team's still going to retire your number. The way things ended between Kawhi and the Spurs, I think it would be the understatement of the century to say it left a sour taste. I thought the way he handled last season, sitting the entire season out, no communication, forced his way out of San Antonio. You can say what you will about that. That, of course, left a sour taste in my mouth as a Spurs fan. And just the same way, I'm sure it left a sour taste in, you know, Cleveland fans. I'm sure they were upset about Kyrie. Oklahoma City fans, I know for a fact that they were upset about Kevin Durant. This has happened in multiple different situations, not just with my team, but with the player that came from my team, Kawhi Leonard. And you have to think about the culture of your team, too. To me, that doesn't fit Spurs culture. The numbers that I see up there in the rafters, you got David Robinson, Sean Elliott, George Gervin, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, of course, to come, Bruce Bowen, guys like that. And that doesn't fit the culture for me. And you can say, yeah, player freedom, players can do whatever they want. If Kawhi doesn't want to be on the Spurs anymore, he doesn't want to be on the Spurs. And he got his wish. He's in Toronto now. But you're not automatic. That doesn't mean you get that honor. Just because you forced your way out, that's something for the Spurs to evaluate. And I don't think that he should automatically be in the rafters just because of his accomplishments, the way he decided to end it. That, of course, was his own choice, but I think he gave up that jersey retirement option. He gave up that bond between him and San Antonio, him and the Spurs. He decided to give that up under his own accord, and that's fine, but I don't think he's getting his number in the rafters because of it. I hope the Spurs remember the way that ended between Kawhi and the team. So with that being said, that's how I evaluate the situation based on my team, but I know every team is different. And I will say too, not to crack on other teams or anything, but not every team has a culture like the Spurs. I think anyone could agree with that. And not every team necessarily has a culture like, what is the Orlando Magic way? What is the Charlotte Hornets? What's the Charlotte Hornets culture? Who's a player that would define the Charlotte Hornets? It's not an even. I'm not hating on those franchises. I've been a fan of players that played for those franchises, but you can't evaluate every team the same way. Not every team has the same history. Celtics and Lakers, teams like that, or teams that just have a certain culture, have a way of doing things, like the Miami Heat, the Golden State Warriors. I think those teams that have a standard are going to judge to that standard, if that makes sense. So, like for Kyrie Irving with Cleveland, I think the fact that he was an instrumental part in bringing them their one and only championship, even just for the city, the fact that they got a championship, him along with LeBron James, I think he probably still deserves it. If they still want to go ahead and retire his number. Now, it's interesting because Colin Sexton is wearing his number right now, which I found I just found that interesting. And I think years down the line, when they think about that clutch shot he made in Game 7, the game where he and LeBron both put up 40 in that finals when they were making the comeback from down 3-1, I think when they think about that accomplishment, I think that's going to be enough to push him over the top for Cleveland, because you're looking at the history of the Cavaliers, and that is the moment of their franchise. That Kyrie hitting that shot, and possibly right next to LeBron's block in that Game 7, those are the moments of that franchise that define the franchise. Those were the best moments of that franchise, and really of Cleveland sports history. So you take that into mind. I think I would retire Kyrie's number in Cleveland. But I'm perfectly okay if Oklahoma City doesn't want to retire Kevin Durant's number. I'll say that. He didn't even bring him a championship. He did a lot of things. He and Russell Westbrook and James Harden were pretty special together, and even just he and Westbrook as a duo. After James Harden left, they had a lot of battles with the Spurs, and I hated seeing them in the playoffs. Absolutely hated it. But the way he decided to leave, unless there's another chapter like there was for LeBron in Cleveland, I think it's their discretion. And I see Russell Westbrook's zero. I see that being all the way in the rafters, no question, no doubt about it. But if they decide not to do the 35, I'll totally respect it, and honestly, I'll probably agree with it. So, on that note, with all that being said, I want to switch gears a little bit to March Madness. My bracket, and not that anyone's all that interested in this, but my bracket started out incredibly rough. I think after the first two rounds, like going into the Sweet 16, I was probably in like the 25th percentile of ESPN brackets or something. I know, totally impressive. I honestly think I had an awful first round, one of the worst I can remember having. But my bracket has rounded into form just a bit as I'm not sure what percentile I'm in right now, but as the tournament has gone on, I've rounded into form a little bit. I had Auburn as a 5 seed. I had them in the Final Four. If you remember our episode a couple weeks ago with Nick Stevens, where we picked up some brackets. I have Auburn in the championship game, so I was lucky enough to get them in the Final Four. We'll talk about them here in a few minutes. I was also got the 3 seed Texas Tech. So the two dark horses to make it into the Final Four both worked well for me. I both believed a lot in those teams, and we'll kind of talk about them more in depth here in a couple of minutes. But I also had Duke, and we all know how that turned out. This was, before I even talk about Duke, I will say this was an incredible weekend of games, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Both totally surpassed the hype, in my opinion. I would say It was about an average first round, or maybe even a little below average if you expect a lot of upsets. There were a lot of borderline. There were a lot of close games. I thought it was a lot of fun to watch, but not quite the amount of mayhem that we've seen in some years past. So I would rate it about average or so, I would say. But wow, Sweet 16 and Elite 8, I can't remember seeing a better second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Just incredible games, a lot of fun to watch, so many great performances. But what I didn't necessarily enjoy watching was seeing Zion Williamson and Duke be ousted from the tournament. Of course, I was a fan of that team, a believer in that team. I had them winning the championship. I think all year I believed in them to be able to win a title with Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish. I just thought it was an incredibly talented team that had a great shot not to be taken down this season. I fully bought in this season. And they met their match this weekend. They were living on the edge really for the entire tournament. Duke and UCF was one of, if not the best game of the tournament, which was a narrow escape by Duke, and then really another narrow escape for them against Virginia Tech in the Sweet 16. Virginia Tech certainly proved that they're an extremely tough team. And we all saw that tip in that just barely didn't go for Virginia Tech at the end of regulation there, that would have tied it and sent it to overtime. So Duke, I mean, they have been the cardiac kids, and wouldn't you know, the Michigan State game shaped up exactly that way, and I thought it would be a good matchup. I know Tom Izzo's teams don't tend to go away quietly. They've had a couple of disappointments over the years in the tournament, but generally, aside from Coach K, I would choose Tom Izzo probably over any coach in college basketball. A salute to Bill Self, salute to Roy Williams, a lot of guys in the game, but Tom Izzo, I mean, if you play for that guy for 4 years, you're going to be in the Final Four. Michigan State's an incredible program. I knew that he would have his team ready to go up against Duke, and I knew Duke would have to meet the challenge, and the game certainly shaped up that way. Cassius Winston, point guard for Michigan State, played an incredible game. I think he's one of the best players in this tournament. But Duke, I thought still... Duke, I thought, had a run in him towards down the stretch. I mean, it was a tooth and nail battle. There was even a point in the game where Duke, in the first half, where Duke took the lead by 9, and I really thought they were about to take off, and Michigan State just went on an absolute tear to respond to that and ended up in the lead before the first half even ended. So, I mean, it was tick for tack. Michigan State totally battled, and that's the thing with Duke is that, and that's what I want to kind of say just in retrospect of their season. The team that they were, with being led by Zion Williamson, they reminded me a lot of that Miami Heat trio that we talked about a few minutes ago with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, because of their defense. That's what I see in common. And I remember with those, the number one thing I remember about that Miami Heat team in the NBA was that you could not afford to turn the ball over against them. Their defense was swarming. I think they played better defensively. Maybe than any of these recent dynasties I can remember. Certainly better than the current Golden State Warriors. And that Miami Heat team would turn you over. They were guard and they would turn you over. You'd have LeBron James and Dwayne Wade roaring down the court. You'd have shooters running to the corner, and they'd get on a run and start blasting you quicker than you could. Quicker than you could snap your fingers. They'd be flying down. Guys would be hitting. You'd have Chalmers and Ray Allen hitting threes from the corner. You have LeBron dunking on you. You got Wade finishing at the rim in transition. And that was their bread and butter. And at any point in the game, you could see them just take off and leave a team in the dust because of creating those turnovers on the defensive end. And that is exactly the way Duke was this season. I saw them play in some close games. I saw them blow some teams out. But that was the hallmark of that team, in my opinion, was just the defensive presence of Zion Williamson and Trey Jones, along with him, really the best defensive guard I saw in college basketball this season. Those two guys and the other guys as well. RJ Barrett's a good defensive player. They've got some good defensive players, some good rim protectors. They would create those turnovers. I mean, Zion is such a presence defensively, as is Trey Jones, and they would create those turnovers, go out in transition, and leave teams absolutely in the dust. It was incredible, and that's the thing you couldn't afford to do against them was turn the ball over and let them get on those runs. Now, kind of returning back to my point about the Michigan State game, is that Michigan State was so composed, and they had a point guard in Cassius Winston who was able to control the game, distribute to his teammates, score a bunch, which is what they certainly needed from him, because they don't have a lot of other really talented scorers besides Cassius Winston. But him being able to create plays for his teammates and score the basketball at the level he did was the key. And the fact that they were able to, they survived those runs from Duke, those times, because they get incredible momentum from Zion Williamson dunking and the plays they make in transition, RJ Barrett finishing in the paint. They just get incredible momentum, and they get ramped up, their fans get ramped up, and I mean, the energy, it is difficult to escape that. It's like quicksand for the other team. It is difficult to get yourself out of that. And I thought Cassius Winston and Tom Izzo really guided that Michigan State team through those moments where it looked like Duke might be able to gather that momentum. So that's, to me, that's what made the difference in the game. But still, down the stretch of the game, the last 5-6 minutes of the game, it was back and forth. It was very close. It looked like Duke had just as good an opportunity to win the game as they did against UCF and Virginia Tech. We're used to seeing them in these close games in the tournament. And I expect a team coached by Coach K to pull those games out. And I was disappointed down the stretch not to see Zion Williamson get the ball quite as much as I had hoped. I felt like Duke wasn't able to take advantage of their possessions, especially late in the last minute or two of the game. RJ Barrett is a very talented player, but I will say from my seat watching that game, he didn't take advantage in the late moments, and especially from the free throw line where he had a chance to put Duke in a good position late. Wasn't able to make a very, very key free throw. But also, I thought just his possession, he forced up, when he wants to be, he can really distribute, but he forced up some shots late in situations where I hoped Zion Williamson would get the ball, including Duke's last meaningful possession of the game, where I thought, when you need 2 points or less as Duke, what better weapon do you have than having Zion Williamson take it straight to the rim? Because really, I mean, even a foul at the rim may not prevent him from being able to finish or at least get to the free throw line. And RJ Barrett took it in amongst a lot of pressure and wasn't able to finish. And I thought that was a theme in games that Duke lost this season. It's certainly not surprising to hear me say because I'm such a fan of Zion, but I just wanted to see him get the ball a little bit more. And I wanted to see them feed him in the post late in the game, which didn't take place. But Michigan State, they played a great game, and they certainly deserved to win. So looking at a couple of the other teams, couple of other incredible games. I mean, we had a couple of games go to overtime. Virginia and Purdue, I got to give credit to Virginia for overcoming really the player of this tournament. I thought Zion Williamson was incredible in the tournament. I think he's the best player in college basketball this season, bar none. But the player of this tournament, and one of the only players to win MVP of a region without having been on the team that won that region in the NCAA tournament, Carson Edwards for Purdue, had two incredible 40-plus point performances in the NCAA tournament, including in the Elite Eight against Virginia. And I watched that game, and the level of shot-making from Carson Edwards was just absolutely incredible. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, Nick and I talked a little bit about Carson and his capabilities as a point guard. We ranked him a little bit below Cassius Winston. But wow, he tested that. And as far as this, you know, it could still be a debate between he and Cassius Winston, and Cassius Winston has had an unbelievable tournament leading his team to the Final Four. But I'm here to tell you, Carson Edwards was the best player I saw in this NCAA tournament. The shots he made, the way he got on fire against Virginia, I don't know how Virginia was able to match his level. I mean, really it was Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome making shots on the other end. It was really a shootout, and I normally would not expect Virginia to win a shootout. And I normally don't expect them to win the tournament, to be quite frank. I don't see them as a team that generally comes through in the tournament, but I am happy for Tony Bennett to see him make the Final Four after that horrible loss against the 16 seed last season. So, great game there. Shifting down to Auburn and Kentucky, another incredibly competitive game. I mean, I watched the entire game, and it couldn't have been more fun to watch those teams go back and forth. But the way Auburn kind of rallied around Okiki, who went down with that ACL injury in the Sweet 16 against North Carolina, I'll say this. I mean, Zion Williamson was my favorite player in the tournament. I think he was the best player in college basketball this year. I think Carson Edwards has been the best player in this tournament. But my favorite player in this Final Four right now, one of my favorite players in college basketball season as well, is Jarrett Harper, point guard for Auburn. Man, he is the motor behind that team, and he and Bryce Brown, incredible level of offensive playmaking, shot making. Seeing Jarrett Harper push the ball up that floor at the speed he does, the way he attacks the rim over and over and over, it reminds me a little bit. It's a little bit reminiscent of Kemba Walker, just that quick twitch that he's got with the ball, the way he just relentlessly attacks the rim, the way he plays with heart. He reminds me of Kemba a little bit. I enjoy watching him. I'm really excited to watch him play in the Final Four. That Auburn team is something serious. And yeah, they definitely made me look good. They made me look like I know what I was talking about when I picked them to the Final Four. But the way they were able to bounce back from an extremely close call in the first round to beat Kansas, beat North Carolina, and beat Kentucky, three of the absolute best programs in the country, blue blood programs, that was incredible. So shout out to Auburn for the run they've made so far, and I think they've got a legitimate chance to win this title. Texas Tech and Gonzaga on the other side of the bracket, the last Elite Eight game we saw, totally competitive, a back-and-forth game all the way. And I don't have a lot of points to break down about it other than the fact that all season I've loved Texas Tech's defense. Hated playing against them as a TCU fan, but their defense, the way Chris Beard coaches defense and the way he gets these players to buy in, take charges, put themselves in a position where they rarely foul unnecessarily. They're just so disciplined and so good on defense. It's something to watch. It's something to see, seriously. I really have believed in them all season. I was confident that they had a good shot to make it to the Final Four. They're an incredible team led by Jarrett Culver, a probable NBA lottery pick. Texas Tech is an outstanding team, and especially defensively, that's something to watch for in the Final Four. For everyone who's out there who's going to be watching, you got to see Tech constrict on defense. I think Tech and Michigan State is going to be an incredible matchup coming up this weekend. I'm excited to watch it. So for my Final Four picks, I'm going to go with Texas Tech over Michigan State, and I'm going to go with Auburn over Virginia. I think Texas Tech and Michigan State, I think, will be an absolute tooth and nail battle. I think it's going to come down again to Cassius Winston's ability to make plays for his teammates and ability to put the ball in the basket. And I think Texas Tech is going to be able to constrict on that as well as any team. I'm not betting against Izzo and Cassius Winston to be able to overcome that necessarily. I know that they can, but I think Texas Tech's defense is going to prevail in the end and send them to the title game. And on the other side, I think Auburn is so incredibly hot right now. I mean, they've blown some teams out. They blew Kansas out. They blew North Carolina out. And Kentucky, that was playing at such a high level, it was such a close game. But even without Okiki, they were still able to win that game against Kentucky. And I think that this run that they're on, this hot streak that they're on, I don't see them being stopped in this round by Virginia. I think they are playing at such a high level with such high confidence. I see Auburn coming through this game. So I expect next week when we're talking about the national title game, I expect that it's going to be between Texas Tech and Auburn, but I really do expect it to be an incredibly competitive Final Four. Speaking of the Final Four, TCU is also in a Final Four. I want to devote a few minutes to talking about them. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in the weeks ahead, of course. We're going to know who wins the NIT by the end of this week. It'll be between TCU and Texas, and then you've got Wichita State and Lipscomb on the other side of the Final Four. And TCU, like I mentioned earlier, this is their second time in three seasons playing in Madison Square Garden, being in the Final Four of the NIT. So I think that they have played really well in this tournament. They've played a little better than I expected them to, coming off of a major disappointment to miss the NCAA tournament. And that's kind of what I wanted to touch on a little bit, is the difference between a season where you narrowly miss the NCAA tournament but are able to make a run in the NIT, as opposed to making the tournament and possibly losing in the first round, the kind of the way TCU did last year. And so as a program, what's better for the program? Which would you rather? Would you rather make the tournament and lose immediately, or make that run in the NIT and still be playing basketball right now at the beginning of April? I think that's a tough question, because there's no doubt that I was disappointed to see them play the way they did at the end of the season and not be able to play themselves into the NCAA tournament. This was a team that was expected to make the NCAA tournament. You want to be in the big dance. There's no question about that. That's the goal at the beginning of the season. That's what you play for. The NIT is just, I mean, the NIT is kind of, it's the loser's bracket. It's the also-rans, and you don't want to be part of that. You don't want your team to be in that group. So with that being said, though, I think it depends on kind of where your program is. TCU certainly is not a blue blood basketball program. It's something that Jamie Dixon is trying to build into a power right now, and was just expected to be a little further along in the process right now with the fact that they were able to make the NCAA tournament last year. But that's the juxtaposition here, is that being in NYC right now and being able to get all these wins and be on the stage and possibly win a trophy, they're one of four teams now that have an opportunity to win a trophy, to end the season on a victory, which is not something that, I mean, out of the 68 teams that were in the NCAA tournament, only one's going to walk away on a victory. So would you rather make a run in the NCAA tournament? Of course, if you could make a run to maybe the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, that's what you want. You want to be in the tournament. You want to be competing for the title. And that's my answer at the end of the day, is I want to compete for the trophy. Even if it means that there's the opportunity that I could get into the first round and lose the way they did, the way TCU did against Syracuse last year, you want to be in the dance. That's what it is at the end of the day for me. That's my call on that. That being said, you get in the NIT. I mean, I keep bringing up these little NIT points, but you do get a couple more home games if you're one of the high seeds in the NIT. It was fun to have more home games and see the team compete, see them win at home in the NIT, and seeing them. I've got a game to watch tonight, TCU and Texas in the NIT. I get to watch my team, which few fans do right now unless you're in the Final Four of the NCAA tournament. So it's not a total, it's a decent consolation, but that's all it is for me, is a consolation. You want to be in the dance, and as a fan of TCU, someone who goes here, I want to see TCU make the tournament next year. I want to see them build the program. That's what helps you build the program. Players don't want to be in the NIT. Even if you win the NIT, that's not where you want to be. You want to be in the NCAA tournament. You want to be in the dance. And you want to push all your chips into the middle of the table. You don't want a consolation. You want your chips in. You want to be in the tournament. With that being said, we're going to put a bow on this episode of Ball Don't Lie. It's been so fun to be here talking hoops with you guys. A lot of fun hoops to watch the rest of this week. We're only about a week away from the NBA playoff scenario being set. That's going to be so much fun to talk about next week. And then by the time we're going to have a champion by the time we record next week's in the NCAA. So that's going to be so exciting to talk about. Hoops is on fire right now. I'm thrilled. So go give us a follow at BDL_pod on Twitter. And thanks so much for being here. Never forget, the ball don't lie.